glad you're here. Fellowship's sweeter knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you. We're glad you're here.
Welcome to Mark and Friends for Thursday, January 11th. 2023. I'm your friend Donna Leland, and today we hear a really encouraging testimony from a man who spent many, many years in prison. Maybe people think those who are incarcerated or even given a life sentence, it's a hopeless cause. But we know when we put our hope in the Lord, He always can come through in ways we never imagined. Let's welcome to Mark and Friends, Ronald Olivier. Ronald, tell us about how did your journey to prison begin?
I got involved with drugs, and with that came a lot of violence. And just like any kid, you become what you see rather than what you hear. My environment, I kind of adapted to my environment. I thought that was the norm. Consequently, I got into it with a guy, and me and my friends and I, we jumped him. And the next time he sees us is Christmas Day, and we're outnumbered, like two or three of us and about six of them. Also, I had on a starter jacket, and at that time, starter jackets was very dangerous to have. People were getting robbed and killed for their starter jacket. And so they see me, and we try to really avoid them and get on a bus and head back. When I get on the first step of the bus, they try to snatch me off the bus. One of the guys, I really thought he was reaching for something. Then I just turned around and started shooting. Left two guys in a pool of blood. One of them died and one of them survived. The 14-year-old died and the 18-year-old survived.
So now you find yourself on this journey. You're still a juvenile, and yet now you're in the criminal system. Tell us about it.
I went to the juvenile bureau, where they charged me with murder. I thought, like, you know, because prior to that, I had been to the bureau before, you know, for some little minor things. And my mother or my daughter come sign me out. And that's what I was looking for this time. But I was in something that my mother couldn't sign me out. After going to juvenile court quite a few times, I was charged as an adult. The juvenile court decided to transfer me to the adult court, and I went from facing juvenile life, which was to the age of 21, I would be released, to facing the death penalty in adult courts. I was 16 at the time of offense, and by the time of the trial, I was 17 years old, and now I'm facing the death penalty for first degree murder. I think the weight of everything came really crashing down on me while the jury was deliberating. Prior to that, you know, I was very optimistic. I'm going home. This won't be long. But the seriousness of it and all that was going on came crashing down on me while the jury was deliberating. They put me in this little holding tank. All alone, I could still hear the keys and the door slam and the keys turned. I could still hear the officer's footsteps fade away till I was all alone in this little holding tank. Everything got real then. And so I began to think, okay, there's 12 people that don't know really much about me that's making the decision whether I live or die. And they can actually come back with a decision for me to die. And so I can remember, I believe God used my mother's voice, and I could hear her saying years prior to that. She said, "Baby, if you ever in trouble that I can't get you out, you call on Jesus." And so that very moment in that holding tank, I got on my knees, I was crying, and I cried out to the Lord, and had a very simple prayer. You know, people say, you know, it's not right to make a deal with God. I made a deal with God. And I said, "Lord," and it was very simple. I said, "Lord, if you don't let them kill me, I promise you I'll serve you the rest of my life." And for the first time in my life, I experienced the peace of God. I didn't know what it was then, but I just know this calmness came over me. It was this inward resolve that I was going to be okay. And so we go back out. The jury had came to the decision, and they came back with a guilty verdict of a lesser offense, which is was the responsive verdict, second degree murder. And second degree murder carried a mandatory life sentence without benefits of parole or probation. In layman's terms, that mean that you die in prison.
But God had his hand on you, and he honored that prayer, and you actually ended up in probably one of the best prisons you could have ever ended up in. Tell us about that, Angola.
It wasn't that at first. Angola, Louisiana State Penitentiary, better known as Angola, it had a reputation for being the most bloodiest prison in the nation. It was very violent. And so I made a decision in my mind on my way there, going down the long road to Angola, that I was going through these gates a man, and I would walk out a man, or be carried out in a box a man. But amazingly, man, God had this plan, you know, and he was protecting me, and he orchestrated this whole plan to where I was placed around some men who was willing to help me and not hurt me. Because there was a lot of chaos that still was going on in the prison. I saw some very horrific things. I witnessed rapes. I witnessed killings in prisons and guys getting beat up. But it never came near me, man. God was protecting me in the midst of all that. And there was these guys, he placed me around some of the greatest men of God you can ever meet. I found in prison. They were pastors and ministers, and it's very difficult to be a pastor in prison. You know, I believe this: if you pastor in the prison, you can pastor anywhere. It's because you live with your members, you know, and so you have to live an upright life, you know, because they're looking for something to say. See, you know, they faking up, and so you really had to live out your life before your congregation, 24 hours a day. You lived in a glass jar. And so these men was very respected because they was not only preaching, but they was walking what they were talking.
God certainly did answer your prayer that you would serve him. And he just placed you in a really special place. You were able to be around godly people, but also an opportunity to grow in your faith with a lot of great resources.
Yes, as they begin to disciple me, because even though something happened to me in that holding tank, I believe I was born again. Just like in a natural, when a baby comes out the womb, it looked like what it came out of. It don't look too cute. And so I looked like what I came out of. And for 2.5 years, it didn't even look like nothing happened to me in that cell. But they begin to help and disciple me, show me the importance of reading the word and renewing my mind and developing the prayer life, and also fellowshipping with other believers. And man, from that, I began to, God began to change me, where it began to look like I was a Christian, change my desires. And so these guys was leading me. And before you know it, there was a Bible college established in 1995. Well, the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary had an extension center in Angola. There were professors that would come from the college on outside and, you know, lecture us and give us exams like any other college. And you was able to earn up until a bachelor's degree. And right now they have a doctorate program now. And so a master's program, excuse me. And so I got into the Bible College in 1995. In 2005, I graduated with a bachelor's degree in Christian ministry, which was very awesome, a very, very awesome point in my life, because prior to that, I always had a habit of starting something and not finishing it. And for the first time for something that long, 4 years, I finished it. That broke that cycle there. And so after the Bible college, you're able to employed in the prison as a inmate minister. That's your job. Angola is like 18,000 acres, and there's different camps all throughout the acres. They will place these ministers in these areas, and that was their job, to make rounds. We were like extensions of the chaplain's department. And even when they was in there, we was there. and we can help guys and just be there with them, lay alongside them, and encourage them, and help them get through wherever they were. And consequently, man, it began to change the whole prison. You know, the gospel was preached in every area of the prison. It was changing the prison. The atmosphere was changing, man. God was present. They had a lot of ministries that were coming in from the outside, helping and pouring into us so we can pour into others. And man, it was just an awesome, awesome time then. And, you know, I found purpose.
Yeah.
You know, I was actually enjoying everyday life while I was in prison.
Now, only God can do that.
Yeah. As crazy as that sound. And I found out, you know, living in purpose and enjoying life has nothing to do with your geographical location. It has everything to do with who was in you,
yeah.
You know. And man, he did some real awesome things there. And so here it is, all these ministers, the Bible College is producing all these ministers. And so it was producing so many, we began to stack up on each other. So the warden came up with, I believe, was the God idea to send out missionaries to other prisons in Louisiana to help evangelize those prisons, to be chaplain's assistants and also pastor churches there. I decided to go to another prison and was a chaplain's assistant and pastor the church there. And man, God launched me off into leadership and pushed me out there like never before. And I got connected with the chaplain there who mentored me. He was a long-standing pastor of a church and still is today. And that pastor, he's also the mayor of his town today, who assisted me when I got out with a job and a place to stay. And just a miracle, man. Just me getting out of my comfort zone connected me to where God was leading me to. I went there for like about 2.5 years and went back to Angola. But while I was there, God laid on my heart to do a prayer service, because there was a lot of guys who was barred from court, couldn't get back in court. A lot of guys who God was changing their hearts was real men of God, but couldn't get out. I did I made a flyer up, put them in all the dormitories and asked guys, look, to bring their legal work, find their legal work, their master prison records, and bring it to the altar. You know, there was a judge higher than the judge, you know, that sentenced them. There was another court we can go to, and it was God strong. They put all, they came with, man, the altar was filled with paperwork. Amazing. I'm talking about it. And it took a lot of faith for that. The church was packed. These guys was digging in laundry sacks and their boxes to find legal work. And they taking it past the law library and bringing it to the chapel. You know, that took a lot of faith. And man, God honored that. And man, God's presence came in there like never before. And man, you could just feel the weight of his presence there. He changed some things. And man, just later, man, a lot of people just went to going home.
That's amazing. That is truly amazing. Laying it all out before the Lord and asking him to be the judge.
Man, and that was insane. I rejoiced with those who was just going home. I felt like a part of me was going home. But I had this life sentence. In fact, it was only me and my assistant pastor who came from Angola on a missionary journey who had life sentences. This was a place where life sentences didn't go. So the Secretary of Corrections had to wave the right for us to go there and do ministry. And so we was the only ones there with life sentences. Later went back to Angola, and a couple of years later, 2012, the United States Supreme Court came down with a ruling in Miller versus Alabama that said it was unconstitutional to give a juvenile a mandatory life sentence, that it violated our Eighth Amendment and cruel and unusual punishment, which was cruel and unusual punishment, and that it talked about how a juvenile was more likely to be rehabilitated than an adult because of the makeup of their brain. Their brain is not fully developed. and talked about the science of the frontal lobe of the brain that's not fully developed. And that's the part of the brain that helps you appreciate risks and consequences. And so that's why juveniles do some crazy things without even thinking, because of that part of the brain. And so it was so contradictory. And so that ruling came down. So that made the sentence I had, the life sentence without benefits of parole or probation, that made my sentence illegal and unconstitutional. So I filed, got a lawyer, filed into the courts a motion to correct the illegal sentence, and it was granted. And so I'm going through this hearing process. I'll never forget, when I get to court, there's a lady just staring at me on the front row. And I know she looked familiar, and she was not breaking her eye contact. Would I break it? Because I'm handcuffed, I'm shackled. I know I look probably kind of intimidated, and I ain't want to make her feel uncomfortable. And so I turned, and I tried to look at her through my peripheral, and she was still just staring at me. And my lawyers come in and say, "Man, man, we got a problem. There's some victim opposition here. The victim's sister showed up." I said, "The victim's sister?" And then it hit me. I said, "No, that's not the victim's sister. That's the victim's mother." I remembered her face from the trial. Because out of everybody in the courthouse, man, I can't even remember. I don't even remember how my lawyer looked. But her face burned in my mind. I could see it right now, on the stand, crying because of what I'd done to her son. And so when I develop a prayer life, that's what I prayed for. I prayed for that face for years. And so I had a desire greater than going home, was to one day, you know, just ask her to forgive me for what I'd done, to have this dialogue with her. And so I saw that opportunity. I said, "Look, go see if I can talk to her. I'd like to have a dialogue with her." So my lawyer goes over to the DA, and the DA talks to her, to come back. She says that she don't want to talk to me, and that everything that she's going to say on the stand. And so I was just so happened that the court date was set back to the following month. And so that gave me time to pray even more. I prayed for this lady more than I prayed for anybody in my life to this day. When we came back to court, she requested that me and her talk. I'm telling you, this is number God. Yeah. I'm telling you, don't tell me what God can't do.
Yeah.
She comes over, they put something behind me. I'm on the bench, I'm handcuffed and shackled. I turn around to her. I never forget, her arms was folded, and she was just glaring at me. And I really broke the silence. I said, "Ma'am," I said, "I take full responsibility for the death of your son." And she unfolded her arms, took a deep breath and exhaled, and she leaned toward me. And I said, "Ma'am, I just ask that you forgive me. You know, I say, I have absolutely no excuse. I say, very stupid decision I made. It was senseless. I say, very impressionable. I say, I just hope you can find it in your heart to forgive me." And she said, "Man, this is very emotional every time I talk about this." She said, and both of us are crying by this time. She said, "I don't hate you." And she said, "I forgive you. And I believe you deserve a second chance at life." Oh man, I couldn't begin to tell you how I felt. Even though I was handcuffed and shackled, I felt them come off of me. It was a lightness that came, you know, just, I can't put it into words, but I felt so free.
Yeah.
It was another level of freedom. It really didn't matter to me what happened in the court proceedings after that, because this was my greatest desire. This was above me getting home, that I can talk to her and share that with her, and really expecting, you know, her to hate me. And I would have understood that.
Sure.
You know, but she forgave me. Man, it was so awesome. She began to tell me some other stuff on me. You have to find it in the book, 27 Summers. I go into detail and a lot of things. What amazing. And so the judge comes back. They re-sentenced me to parole eligibility. I never forget, everybody was rejoicing in the courtroom. And I was the last case, so everybody was leaving. My family, I had a lot of family support there. I never forget, my niece was the last one going out the door, and the judge said, "Mr. Olivia, you can visit with your family a while." And so I told them to come back. So she gets everybody back. And amazingly, the lady pushed past my family to get to me first. Oh, man. And she told me, she said, man, I'm happy for you. And she told me, she said, man, I just want you to promise me one thing. I said, yes, ma'am, anything. She said, don't pick up that gun again. I said, you never have to worry about that.
Yeah.
I said, I promise you that. 2018, November 30th, I walk out of the prison of Louisiana State Penitentiary. What an awesome experience there. I felt like I was dreaming. It was a surreal moment. That chaplain that was at the other prison who I did ministry with, who was now the mayor of his town, had given me a job working with the town and gave me two jobs, really. I was working with the town, and he employed me in his church on staff as a minister.
Amazing.
I ended up becoming a supervisor over the whole gas system in that town, the natural gas.
Yeah.
Amazing. God just was doing miracle after miracle. And I was telling my wife, you know, I said, man, I don't want you to think I'm ungrateful what I'm about to say, but I said, man, I'm just, you know, God ain't called me to be the gas man. He, you know, I have a real great desire to be in full-time ministry.
Yeah.
And a week later, I get a call from the former warden of Angola on Burl King, who had just became the commissioner of Mississippi Departments of Corrections in Mississippi. He's over all the prisons in Mississippi. He was looking for a chaplain. He called me for a chaplain job to work as a director of chaplaincy in Mississippi State Penitentiary in Parchment, Mississippi.
Oh.
I'm telling you, a miracle.
Thank you so much, Ronald, for being a part of Mark and Friends and sharing your amazing story with us. Ronald Olivier, he is the author of 27 Summers, My Journey to Freedom, Forgiveness, and Redemption During My Time in Angola Prison. Thanks so much, Ronald, for joining us on Mark and Friends.
Yes, thank you so much, Donna, for having me on. I really appreciate this opportunity just to share with the world my story of hope, my story of forgiveness and redemption. Really, really appreciate you. Thank you.